Greetings, fellow ding-dongs. It is time yet again for another short episode of Ding Dong Ditch. And this week's episode is going to see us doing things a little differently than usual. I'm attempting to fly more by the seat of my pants the way I do on typical episodes that I have with guests. Because, you know, sometimes you just need to take the training wheels off and trust yourself and trust the process and become comfortable with talking all by yourself in a musty garage. So this week we're going to talk about a particular detective agency that you may have heard of and you might not realize are still very much at work today. That's right, we're talking about the Pinkertons. So the other night, my son sent me a text message asking if I had heard the story about the Pinkerton Detective Agency raiding the home of a YouTuber named Dan Cannon, who specializes in the game Magic the Gathering. If you're not familiar, Magic the Gathering is a fantasy-based role-play card-based game that has been around for quite a while. I used to play a lot of Magic the Gathering back during my high school days. I had my boxes containing all my cards that were mixed in a certain way, and very good times to be had as a nerd. And the game is still very much alive and well today. A lot of local game shops host Magic tournaments, and the cards themselves can range in value anywhere from, you know, mere cents to hundreds of dollars. So it's quite the hobby, quite the lifestyle to get involved in. And of course, there are a lot of communities and YouTubers, podcasters, creators that base all their content on Magic. Well, Dan Cannon had apparently gotten hold of a set of Magic the Gathering cards from a dealer. And this was a new released set called March of the Machine Aftermath, which was basically a booster set. So there was a March of the Machine overall set, and then the Aftermath was a little add-on. The only problem is that Aftermath set technically wasn't supposed to be up for sale yet. It turned out quite possibly that the owner of Magic the Gathering, the company Wizards of the Coast, who may also sound familiar to you if you happen to play Dungeons and Dragons, for instance. Well, it turns out that because this booster pack wasn't ready for sale just yet, Wizards of the Coast was trying to recover those cards from Mr. Cannon. According to Wizards of the Coast, they made several attempts to reach out to him and apparently didn't hear back. If you want to visit Dan Cannon's YouTube page, you can absolutely do that. He talks a lot about how this whole thing went down. So Dan goes and posts about this booster set that he bought online. He posts about it on his YouTube channel. He had no idea that anything had gone awry here between Wizards of the Coast and the dealer that he bought the cards from. So just imagine you buy a product and maybe you want to go online on your YouTube channel, your Twitch channel, your podcast or whatever, and talk about this purchase with the community. Well, suddenly one morning, the Pinkerton Detective Agency pounded on this man's door and pretty much stormed into their home. And in doing so, the agents cited several laws about copyright infringement and threatening him with up to a decade in jail and over $200,000 in fines if he didn't cooperate. According to Dan Cannon, when he spoke to the gaming blog Kotaku about this via email, the Pinkertons said if he didn't hand over the product, they would call the county sheriff to detain them until they arrived to arrest them and search the house for the cards. And on top of that, the Pinkertons were also forcing them to produce receipts for every single Magic the Gathering card they had in the house, which, according to Cannon, is literally over 1 million cards. And when Kotaku attempted to reach Wizards of the Coast for comment, they had nothing to say. So basically what this amounts to is Wizards of the Coast hired the Pinkerton Agency to go and recover these assets. And this is not unusual. This is sort of what the Pinkerton Agency does now. They call themselves a risk management and security company. But the thing is, the Pinkerton Agency goes way far back in the history of this country, and you've no doubt heard of them in some form or another, especially if you've ever watched any Western movies or anything having to do with stagecoaches or union busting or the Civil War security and all that. And that's because the Pinkerton Detective Agency was originally the United States' premier law enforcement agency, well before we ever had an FBI or a CIA or any of these other alphabets that we are very familiar with today. If you needed something protected, if you wanted something spied on, if you wanted to, say, put on some disguises and, you know, track some people to see what they're up to, you hired Pinkertons to do that for you. So let's back it up just a little bit here, because I was doing my research on this agency, and of course I've heard of them quite a bit because I do watch a lot of Western movies, but also I love video games, and one of my favorite video games is Red Dead Redemption 2, which features the Pinkertons in a pretty prominent role as the detectives that are hunting down the outlaws that you're playing in this game. And the game, of course, is set in the year 1899. So this would be right around the height of the Pinkerton Agency's existence. But their actual founding goes back quite a bit further, and I happen to find it pretty fascinating. So for the rest of this episode, I would like to talk about that and then also kind of wind it back to this Magic the Gathering story and some of the other more contemporary examples of the kind of work that the Pinkerton Agency does. The Pinkerton Private Security and Detective Agency, they just call themselves Pinkerton now. They used to be known as the Pinkertons National Detective Agency. It was established in 1850 by a Scottish-born man named Alan Pinkerton, and he immigrated over to Chicago to set up business as a cooper. A cooper is somebody who makes barrels. So barrels for wine, whiskey, what have you. It's a pretty specialized little field. And as a bourbon fan, many hats off to the coopers out there. But Alan Pinkerton did not start his life as a detective. In fact, he wanted to do really well in his barrel making business, but about 5 years after he immigrated over here, he stumbled upon a group of thieves and counterfeiters who were looking for scrap lumber near his business in Chicago. And so he started doing sort of surveillance on that gang of people. And whenever he compiled enough information, he turned it over to the police, and they were able to make these big arrests of this roving band of thieves that was around the city, and everybody was talking about it. So it wasn't long after that, because of his ability to investigate and get information and do essentially detective style work, he ended up becoming a small town sheriff. And he also ended up becoming Chicago's first police detective, and worked also as an agent for the United States Postal Service. So it was around 1850, about 8 or 10 years after he made that first arrest, or helped make that first arrest in Chicago, that he opened a private investigation firm that became known as the Pinkerton National Detective Agency. In fact, the slogan for the Pinkerton Detective Agency was "We Never Sleep." And their logo was an eye. And that is where the phrase "private eye" came from as it relates to private detectives. They mostly worked private security for railroad owners and other big business owners who were looking to stop various outlaws from taking their assets. So, and you know, in the founding days of this country, that was not an uncommon thing, especially as we hear about bandits and the Wild West and all that. There were the Pinkertons trying to bring this sort of air of civility and order to all that. So it was a perfect place in the vacuum of law enforcement, essentially, at that time. But not only that, the Pinkerton Detective Agency also was a little progressive for its time. In 1856, Alan Pinkerton hired a woman named Kate Warney, and she walked in to the office and requested a job as a detective whenever she saw some listings posted around town that they were looking to build a detective staff. Well, at that time, of course, female investigators were completely unheard of, and he made sure to say this pretty much outright. Well, Kate wasn't having any of that. She made sure to convince Mr. Pinkerton that women were a particularly valuable asset in the investigation realm because she could, quote, worm out secrets in many places to which it was impossible for male detectives to gain access. For instance, she could cozy up to the wife of a suspected thief and get information. She could convince them to reveal where they were storing, say, stolen loot. She could get into society events. She knew how to change her accent. She liked the ability to dress up and do things that men typically struggled to do at that time. And so he saw the value of that and brought her on. And in fact, during one case, she apparently was able to get a suspect to give her very crucial info after she disguised herself as a fortune teller. So this woman is fascinating. And until I started doing my research on the Pinkerton Agency, I had never heard of her before. And so I dug a little deeper just to learn a little bit more about her. And she became sort of the preeminent leader of the female division of the Pinkerton Agency. And they ended up employing a lot of women as a result of that. And in fact, you could almost say that he also brought about the advent of spy work, which we hadn't been doing a whole lot of prior to that. So he ended up kind of formalizing that as a practice, especially for big businesses and governments. And that continues to have an effect, as we see to this day, and we'll get to that. But another thing that I found really interesting is that the Pinkertons were involved in the foiling of a plot to assassinate Abraham Lincoln in March of 1861, as he was traveling by rail from Illinois to take office in Washington. And he had this whole whistle stop tour planned. He was going to switch trains in Baltimore, but he was going to have all these other visits and everything along that way. Well, the Pinkertons ended up hearing about this alleged plot with the help of Kate Warney and several other agents. So they ended up doing this whole setup where first they contacted the president to let him know, hey, you know, we've been hearing about this whole assassination plot, because Kate knew how to get herself again into these sort of circles that were part of the rising rebellion of the South. But the interesting thing about this, too, is if you read, say, the history of Kate Warney, and from the Pinkertons' perspective, they talk about this whole operation, about all the ways that Kate insinuated herself into the circles to gather this intel. And as they reported it back to Lincoln, at first, Lincoln was very resistant. He didn't seem particularly convinced that there was any real threat against him. And he also didn't want to be branded in the press as a coward who had to run and hide anytime there was a possible threat on his life. And of course, talking about this in retrospect and knowing what eventually did happen to Lincoln, it's kind of sad and ironic in a way that, you know, he had to be convinced to have the kind of security that he would have needed to really save his life. And in fact, that's kind of what ended up happening, because although they were successful in changing the president's itinerary to get him to switch trains under disguise so that he could avoid coming in contact with this group that had intended to allegedly assassinate him, the press ended up completely lampooning him and calling him a coward. On top of that, none of the would-be assassins were actually ever caught or arrested. So there are historians that cover this topic that actually think that the threat was either made up by Pinkerton or just exaggerated for effect so that they could seem a lot more powerful than they actually were. Lincoln was actually quite convinced by the effectiveness of the Pinkertons after this whole thing. So he actually employed them yet again during the Civil War. In fact, Pinkerton was very much an abolitionist and a Union guy. So he was able to insinuate himself into Lincoln's circle pretty well. And in doing so, he organized an intelligence service for General George B. McClellan, who commanded the Army of the Potomac. Operating under the name E.J. Allen Pinkerton, he would set up these different spy groups behind enemy lines that would infiltrate different sympathizer groups for the rebel army. He even had agents that would interview escaped slaves in order to get information about the Confederacy. And so the operation actually ended up being very successful in terms of collecting intelligence, but apparently not all of it was accurate. In fact, there was a pretty famous screw-up that happened during 1862 in the Peninsula Campaign, and apparently Pinkerton reported that the Confederate forces around Richmond, Virginia were more than twice their actual size. But General McClellan believed that faulty intel, and despite outnumbering the rebels by a large margin, he delayed his advance and made repeated calls for reinforcements. So that's the problem with information, right? It's one thing to be able to go out and compile and get all this info through your spy network, but your info is only as good as your spies. It's one reason why, say, investigators, whenever they're investigating a crime, if they're getting, say, jailhouse tips, that's something that they're not going to rank too high because there's too much possibility at stake that someone is trying to, you know, sell some bullshit in order to get a favor. So that's kind of the problem of what was happening here. But, you know, the Pinkertons were still very powerful and still rolling along. It was one of those things where better to have a force out there to collect all this information and have all this spy capability, even if maybe it isn't all accurate. Like, it almost has to be Snopes'd in order to figure it out. Whatever the equivalent of Snopes was back in those days, I have no idea. But anyway, the Pinkertons also were the first law enforcement group to put together a sort of criminal database. Of course, in the context of the 1800s, you know, but they called it a rogues gallery. And you will hear that again, like Private Eye, rogues gallery is another sort of general term that you hear in the law enforcement circles. But it was a collection of mugshots and case histories. And the agency would use all that and keep track of various wanted suspects. So it would also note, say, any distinguishing characteristics like scars or birthmarks, tattoos, piercings, things like that. And then they would also assemble a bunch of newspaper clippings and other criminal rap sheets and things like that in order to form a file on someone. Again, this was not something that was done as a matter of practice back in those days. Prior to this, you didn't have, again, an FBI. You know how they always talk about the FBI has a file on everybody? Well, back in those days, the Pinkertons had a file on everybody. And it would be the FBI later in the 20th century that would come along and actually put together the type of criminal database that they're very well known for. And of course, we would get to the development of fingerprint databases and things like that. But here is the origin story of all of that. And then there is the whole other kind of sordid activity that the Pinkertons involved themselves in over time. And in a lot of ways, how they ended up being the group that would raid a home just to get some Magic the Gathering cards that were accidentally distributed by the company. When it became apparent after the Civil War that the Pinkertons would have other uses outside of providing intel for a war movement or for the president, that's when they started going after other big name outlaws at the time. And one particularly very famous one is a man named Jesse James. And this was during, of course, the expansion of the American frontier, where, you know, you had railroads that would stretch from one side of the country to the other. And that's when you needed all the protection you could get, because that's when bandits and other type of bounty hunters were out there robbing these trains. The agency would actually employ detectives to infiltrate these gangs, sort of like deep cover, undercover agents. And they infiltrated the Reno Gang, which was the gang that actually did the nation's first train robbery. And they also apparently went after Butch Cassidy and the Wild Bunch and a bunch of other really famous outlaws. But in the 1870s, they were tracking Jesse and Frank James, probably the most famous bank robbers of their time. And one of their agents ended up murdered while trying to infiltrate the gang, and two more died in a shootout. So it was a pretty bloody time. And in 1875, the Pinkertons launched a raid on the James brothers' mother's house in Clay County, Missouri. And Frank and Jesse were nowhere around at that point because they'd received a tip. But the Pinkertons got into a confrontation with their mother, Zerelda Samuel. And during that standoff, a member of the Pinkerton group ended up throwing an incendiary device through the house's window. And it ended up blowing off her arm and killing the James's brother's 8-year-old half-brother. So that was quite a mishap. That particular embarrassment ended up turning the public opinion against the Pinkertons after a long time and a lot of history involved there. And so Alan Pinkerton, after this whole thing, he reluctantly decided to back off from the James gang. And Jesse would go on to do about 7 more years of bank robbery and outlawing until he was killed by an assassin from his own gang in 1882. But then the late 1800s start rolling around. And of course, the Wild West is starting to wind down a little bit as civilization continues to settle across the land. And that's when the Pinkertons decided to become sort of a paramilitary wing of big corporations. You would have these oil companies, these steel and iron worker companies, these big industry people using the Pinkertons to spy on employees who were thinking about forming unions. And they would also break strikes if, in fact, people did unionize and attempt to strike. And during this period, of course, the labor movements are huge, you know, as workers are tired of being exploited and overworked, and there's no real laws or regulations protecting them. So a lot of workers at this time are forming unions and trying to earn some sort of rights. Well, the Pinkertons would show up and really start shooting at, beating up, or, you know, fighting any and all who were attempting to strike. And there was a particularly infamous one at the Homestead Mill. That was an 1892 strike by the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers. That was at the Carnegie Steel Company. And if you're not familiar, the name Carnegie is very famous out in Pittsburgh and other areas of Pennsylvania. And so, and of course, Steel Country is out there and still very prominent in the culture to this day. But the Carnegie Steel Company paid 300 Pinkertons to come in and be security at the mill in Homestead, Pennsylvania. When the Pinkertons arrived at the plant on river barges, the agents started fighting with thousands of striking workers, and the battle waged on all day with guns, bricks, and dynamite. By the time the Pinkertons, who were outnumbered, finally surrendered, at least a dozen people were dead and several more wounded. And the fallout from that whole fight ended up really causing problems for the steel union as well. But it also caused a lot of people to brand the Pinkertons as hired thugs. So there were a lot of state laws that were passed after that that banned the use of outside companies and guards in labor disputes. So that whole incident right there, again, was an embarrassment for the Pinkerton agency and a way of showing that they had grown a bit too big for their britches. Speaking of how big for their britches they were, the Pinkertons were actually larger than the standing army in the United States at the time. After Alan Pinkerton died in 1884, his two sons, Robert and William, took over the company, and they continued to grow it by leaps and bounds. So in the 1890s, during that whole incident of the mill strike, they had 2,000 detectives and 30,000 reserves on hand, which was more than we had in the Army of the United States at that time. And because a lot of states were actually afraid that the Pinkertons could end up becoming sort of a private army of mercenaries, several states ended up outlawing Pinkertons altogether. And one of those happened to be the state of Ohio, which is interesting because actually they settled in Cincinnati, like for one of their main headquarters whenever they first got started. So the Pinkertons actually have quite a bit of history here in Ohio. That being said, you know, coming back after going through some of this history, and there's a lot more of it, a lot of ugly disputes that the Pinkertons have involved themselves in over the years. By the time the 20th century rolled around, a lot of police forces and FBI and other government agencies had basically taken on all the roles that the Pinkertons were doing. I think a lot of people felt better having a government-run agency that could be directly accountable to voters rather than a private one, which could be a lot harder to contain. But the company is still very much involved as a private security firm and guard service. And they don't shy away from their history at all. In fact, they seem quite proud of it. If you go to their website, they get very boastful about their history in this country. And, you know, in some ways, I understand that. It is quite the history, but it's a very sordid one as well. And it goes well beyond the 1892 Homestead Strike. You know, even as they're trying to do more white collar things like corporate investigations and risk management and all that, what we find is that even as recently as 2018, we're seeing them being used to do espionage for companies. Jeff Bezos employed the Pinkertons to spy on Amazon employees who were considering unionizing. Starbucks also used the service of Pinkerton to spy on employees who were looking to unionize individual shops. And I find that very interesting because way back in 1936, as the U.S. Senate was investigating the Pinkertons and their anti-labor practices and industrial espionage and strike breaking, Robert Pinkerton II, who was the great-grandson of Alan Pinkerton, was apparently driven to end the Pinkertons' anti-union work, but I don't think that that's really what happened. And there are a lot of reasons why you need to be careful whenever you read sort of the whitewashed history of the Pinkertons through their POV, because they'll say that back in the 1800s that they protected railroad shipments for, you know, several American railways. But they forget to mention, for instance, that they got involved in the Great Railroad Strike of 1877, where the Pinkertons infiltrated that particular group and ended up in a bloody conflict that left over 100 people dead. And then there's also their infiltration of a union organizing activity of the Molly Maguires. The Molly Maguires were actually a sort of secret society of Irish immigrant coal miners who eventually wanted to start organizing for workers' rights. And when a Pinkerton detective named James McParlin was hired to conduct this spy work, he ended up snitching on a lot of these people who ended up being executed by the state in 1877. And then there was another incident with the Colorado National Guard in 1914 called the Ludlow Massacre, where guardsmen attacked and set fire to the camp where miners and their families slept. 66 people, many of them women and children, died in the attacks, according to an article that I read in Teen Vogue. As they try to call themselves a risk management company, just know that a lot of that quote-unquote risk management has a lot of blood all over it. So that is where we are as of today. We wind up starting with the very recent, I mean, really the case with Wizards of the Coast and Magic the Gathering. This case is actually ongoing as we speak here in April of 2023. This only happened a few days ago, but Pinkertons are still alive and well. And why they have tried to clean up their image, actually being bought out by a Swedish security company called Securitas. That happened back in 1999. And Securitas also purchased a longtime Pinkerton rival named the William J. Burns Detective Agency. The company is headquartered in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And, you know, this is meant to make them look very clean and very respectable. But then we have them, you know, raiding someone's house, terrorizing them, threatening them with jail time for having Magic the Gathering cards in their possession. That is pretty much the long and short of the history and the now of the Pinkerton Detective Agency. And it should be noted, because I mentioned playing Red Dead Redemption 2 and the Pinkerton Agency being featured in that, the Pinkerton company actually attempted to file suit against Rockstar Games, the creator of Red Dead Redemption, because of the negative portrayal that they had in that game. But I am all but certain that that case has been since tossed out of court, and rightfully so. And if you have any questions, or if you know of anything about Pinkerton that I did not cover here, you know, feel free to reach out to me at ddarknesstime@gmail.com. Or if you're on the Patreon, which, you know, this episode is as of right now being released exclusively to Patreon to be then released about a month later. So if you're listening through Patreon, thank you so much for your support. And if you want me to cover some other short topic that you think is really interesting, that is history or contemporary or whatever you like, and it just happens to be weird, dark, morbid, or whatnot, please reach out to me. I am looking forward to hearing from you, and I will be back again with another one real soon. In the meantime, be good, you little ding-dongs.